Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the January 15th, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, hope you're all having a great weekend, another Chamber of Commerce weekend here on Florida's Space Coast. Cool morning and a beautiful afternoon. Glad that you're standing by to spend the next hour with us, hopefully, talking about our space program. We have a lot to talk about today. We've got an update for you on Discovery. We're going to hear from former launch director Bob Seek about the new astronauts being inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. Tina Lang from Space Florida is going to stop by, and we've got some neat audio that we want to share from you or share with you from NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden, all having to do with the future of our space program, and that is certainly the topic of our first segment here this morning. With so much to do, we'll get right along to it. Of course, along the way, as always, we appreciate your input into the show, this Space Talk show, all about our space program, and no matter what part of it you're interested in, I'm interested in it as well. So we surely would love to talk to you about what's on your mind. 321-768-1240 is the number to call, as always. 768-1240, the local number, *1240 for AT&T wireless customers here along Florida's Space Coast. It's a free phone call. Dumps you right here into the studio. And if you're listening to us online right now at WMMBAM.com, or just were maybe be a little shy and want to send us an email, we welcome that as well. Our address to reach us anytime about Space Talk is spacetalking@AOL.com. spacetalking@AOL.com. The screen is up here, and we'll see your email right away and get to your questions and comments. Well, let's talk about the future of our space program and maybe some developments that have taken place this week. You know, there's so many things that happen behind the doors, the walls, the conference rooms, that until you see fire in the flame trench, a lot of times you're not aware it's happening. And yet these are the meetings and deliberations that are setting the future of our space program and what we will see launched, or maybe what we won't see launched from our own backyards here in the future. And this week was a particularly interesting development. As you all know, just to set the stage and to update those of you that don't follow it as closely, of course, last February, a year ago, when President Obama released the budget for the fiscal year 2011, the direction of our space program was significantly changed in that the Constellation program, the Back to the Moon program that we had been aiming at and planning for, was canceled. Rockets programs, development programs were canceled. Spacecraft programs were canceled. By the time along about April came along, the pushback from the space community was such that that plan was retooled a little bit, rethought out, and then Congress got involved and started putting together an authorization plan, and finally passed that, both the House and the Senate, passing an authorization bill, a three-year plan for NASA, that, among other things, would have NASA continuing to develop a brand new space launch system, a brand new heavy lift launch vehicle. You can it can go by any number of different acronyms and concepts, but the idea that NASA itself, the government, would have a heavy lift launch vehicle to use. And the law said, the plan said, that NASA was going to fast start that, get that going, use existing materials and designs to wherever practical, and yet here's the budget, and get it all done by 2016. And this week, NASA came back with a report to Congress that Congress had asked for, saying basically, how are you going to do that? And while the details are really muddy, and there's all sorts of different scenarios And you can look at this a lot of different ways. In effect, NASA said, no, we cannot do this. We cannot design a heavy lift launch vehicle given the budget that we have in the time that's been allotted. And since then, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of pushback back and forth, a lot of rhetoric. The space community is abuzz by this. This has all happened just in the last couple of days here. The blogging community, the space blogging community, is just absolutely besides itself, throwing all sorts of muck around, calling people names and proposing conspiracy theories, and NASA officials are lying, and there's bureaucratic conspiracies and whatnot. But the bottom line is that NASA said it can't do it. Congress has said, and Congress meaning in this case basically Senator Nelson, representing us here in Florida, Senator Hutchinson in Florida, responding to NASA, responding to Charlie Bolden, the administrator, and saying basically two things. One, you have to do this. This is the law, and you are required to do it, and so go figure out how to do it. And the second thing was, and this is the part that's interesting to me. This is the part that's not getting a lot of play yet because it all just happened in basically the last 24, 36 hours or so, is that NASA's being required to build this new heavy lift launch vehicle that allegedly will be able to take us back to the moon and to be the rocket that we would use to leave low Earth orbit to go explore the solar system. We don't know the destination. We don't know what craft we're carrying. We don't know the mission necessarily. We don't know those very specific things that so often engineers just demand that they have to know to go do these things. But the idea that we're going to have this heavy lift vehicle to carry, you know, various metric tons of weight, and there's even some debate now about whether it's metric tons or tons and what the exact number is and what that number is based on. Is it based on a current capability? In one case, there's a stream of thought that says that this is all being based on what the Saturn V could carry and that somehow defines heavy lift. So we're even debating about what heavy lift is. But in any case, the thing that interested me about what the Senate said and what Senator Nelson specifically, Senator Hutchinson said specifically in a letter to Charlie Bolden 2 days ago, it was sent to him on Thursday, basically says that, okay, maybe you can't afford the technology. If you can't afford it because you can't develop the technology, we're saying, hey, go back and use what you already have. Go use the shuttle main engines. Go use the solid rocket boosters. Use the external tanks. Use those things that we already know how to build. But maybe what you need to do is go change the way you do business. And it says here, this is a quote from the letter that Senator Nelson and Senator Hutchinson sent to the NASA administrator. It says, quote, previous studies by both NASA and industry have indicated that by building on past investments in available technologies, NASA can reach initial operating capability of a scalable heavy lift launch vehicle with the funds authorized. Okay, so pause there for a moment. That's saying basically, okay, stop talking to me about that you don't have enough money to take what you already know how to do and put together a configuration that will meet our needs. You can do that, they're saying. So then it continues and concludes this thought, especially if the agency refines its procurement, contract management, and oversight processes. Okay, and that's the clarification that the senators are sending to NASA. NASA's, again, from by all accounts here, putting together this program, putting together a brand new rocket, and trying to make it fit and trying to make it work and be affordable, and yet they're not looking at changing the way they go about doing business. And that's the next step now, is to see how will NASA respond to this and talk about changing the way business is done so that they can afford this technology in a way that they haven't been able to do before based on their old ways of doing business. So, very interesting as this process continues. Now, when we return, we're going to jump right into some audio from Charlie Bolden from an AIAA conference 2 weeks ago that talks about the future of our space program and answers some questions also about what he sees in store for the Kennedy Space Center. That's it for now. We're going to take a quick break. This is Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
And indeed, welcome back to to Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. Let's go directly to some audio of NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden answering questions from the audience at an AIAA conference in Orlando the week before last. Listen to this.
The first one is a two-page multi-part question. You've given a great overview of an outstanding and historic technological accomplishment. But most of us do not want the greatest aerospace accomplishments to be things we visit in museums. We want them to be programs we work on. So what's next? What is the challenge that the students in this audience can look forward to working on? What program do you envision NASA championing that will have both the vision to inspire, the funding to succeed, and the political support to complete? What do you hope your legacy will be as NASA administrator?
Boy, the political the political support to complete. I will share with you, my mantra has become, in talking to everybody, all of our stakeholders, whether it's the people in the White House, people in OMB, people in the Congress, that whatever systems we develop next will have to fulfill three criteria. They'll have to be affordable, and that is the dominant criteria. They'll have to be sustainable, and that goes to the question. They will have to last. They'll have to be systems that we can convince people are worthy so that they last over multiple Congresses and multiple administrations. I will tell you that I think one of the best tools or one of the best ways to help assure that, it doesn't guarantee it, but to help assure it, is our international cooperation and our cooperation with industry and academia. And then finally, they have to be realistic. We cannot continue to promise people that we will deliver something that we know in our heart is not attainable. So affordable, which is the number one figure of merit, if you will, sustainable and realistic. We are in the process now of trying to come to a decision on what the next space launch system or heavy lift launch vehicle will be. And I can share with you, you know, the big question now is, what do you want for a first stage engine? Do you want, LOX and hydrogen, or do you want LOX and I call it kerosene, RP? And that is a critical decision, because from that, you determine basically the rest of the architecture. So that's the thing that we are wrestling with right now. And you may say, well, shucks, just make a decision. It is difficult because we are trying to build a system for the nation, not just for NASA. So it has to be a system that will be usable by the Defense Department, by industry, even by commercial entities at some point after we develop the system. We are in the process of building a multi-purpose crew vehicle, and we're pretty much settled on what that will be like in principle. And these are things that we already have young people. People tell me don't use the term young people, but I'm a young person. You know, I will be 60-something. I forget. When you get to be my age, you forget. But I'll be 60-something in my next birthday in August, and I can still consider myself to be very young. So those of you sitting in the audience, and some of you I can see right in the middle who look like you're in high school or college, there are really things for you to do, and we really need your leadership. It's really important to understand what I mean when I say we need your leadership. When I give lectures to young people on campuses about leadership, I tell them that everybody's a leader. And one of the most important jobs of a leader, when you're not the person who is physically in charge, is to convince the person who is of what the right course of action is. So many of you sitting in this audience will have to talk and counsel people like me and help us make the proper decisions. Because in spite of the fact that we may think we know everything, we don't. I have learned that through the years. So I really am looking forward to working with many of you who have a desire to enter the space program. When you talk about NASA, though, I must remind you again, NASA is not just about sending people to space. NASA is a unique organization in our government. It is the only It's probably the only organization in our government that every single day is involved in science, technology, engineering, and math. We apply them every single day. Other than the military, other than the Department of Defense, we are the only organization in our government that puts people at risk every single day. We have people who come to work because they know it's going to be a difficult day, and they know it's going to be a challenging day, and they know that they are going to put their lives at risk on that day. So it takes a different kind of person to want to work for this organization. But we believe in what we do, and we feel it in our hearts. And what I tried to tell you about Shuttle today, what Arnie and some of the other folk who talked yesterday, Glenn Lunny, what people will tell you in the panel that follows this, is that this is an incredible walk of life if you choose it. We try to leave something that will be worthy, you know, of your picking up the mantle for. So please don't get discouraged. If science is your passion, there are gazillions of discoveries yet to be made. If technology is your passion, help us determine new ways to get to the places that we need to go. Because we know one of the reasons that Shuttle is going away is because Shuttle was never designed to go beyond low Earth orbit. And that's not where the human species wants to live. You know, we want to explore. We are a people. We are a species that has to explore and has to go beyond low Earth orbit. So we are working to make this the commercial entity successful so that we can still gain access to low Earth orbit. But our job in NASA is exploration and going beyond that. And we will need you to help us do that.
Well, and then the administrator was asked about the future of the Kennedy Space Center and commercial human spaceflight in general, and here's what he said.
Remember, I talked about affordability and sustainability. If I answer the second question first, we could go off and try to launch humans from multiple places around the country. I don't think that's reasonable, personally. I talked about being realistic. It is not realistic to think that we can, you know, we can set up a site in Maine and Texas and other places. We have an incredible launch site for human beings at the Kennedy Space Center. And in my mind, that will remain the place from which humans leave this planet if they happen to leave from American soil. Now, in time, we may develop launch sites at other places. We may go back to Vandenberg, as we were doing as a part of the shuttle program, but did not utilize because of the Challenger accident. So there are other things we can do. But when I talk about affordability, sustainability, and realism, the Kennedy Space Center and the Kennedy Cape Canaveral complex will, for the foreseeable future, be the home of human spaceflight. What is human spaceflight? Human spaceflight, Lisa Malone and I were talking a little bit earlier today. You all need to understand, we are not walking away from human spaceflight. The critical importance of the success of Falcon 9 and Dragon back last month was that it demonstrated that someone, some entity other than a government can do what it is that humans want to do. They want to leave this planet. We need to be able to get to the International Space Station. There are people who dream of industries that will operate in orbit. I know that these are realistic dreams and aspirations. And my job as the NASA administrator, somebody asked about my legacy. If when I leave my office, we're well on the way to having a viable commercial space program that's operating in and about low Earth orbit, I will be happy. If when I walk away, we have given up on that, I will be a very sad human being, because I will have, I promised my grandkids, you know, that they were going to be able to do what their granddad did. And the way we are going to do it is by utilizing commercial entities to provide the access to low Earth orbit. Access. There's a difference between access and exploration. Commercial entities do access. NASA does exploration. Exploration is expensive. Exploration is risky. Exploration is dangerous. And only an entity like NASA can do that. You know, let's be realistic. Let's not be foolish. And let's not fool others. You know, I wish I could tell you that everybody in this room 10 years from now is going to be going into space, because introduction of the commercial entities have allowed anybody who wants to go and buy a ticket. That's true. If you have $20 million, you know, in the next 10 years, or maybe 10, I mean, the price will come down over time, but we're still talking about a significant amount of money. So let's be realistic. We want to continue the ability of humans to get to space, and that's the key for commercial involvement. We want to be able to continue humans' exploration of our universe far beyond low Earth orbit, and that's NASA's role. Our mission, our vision has always been to explore, to expand human presence into the universe. That's what we do. Enough preaching, okay? I'm not sure I answered your questions, but I tried.
Well, and there you go. That was NASA Administrator Charlie Brolin in Orlando about 10 days ago. I don't know, the future may be, again, as clear as mud right now. But, you know, you listen to some of those words and, you know, the guy's a sincere guy. You got to believe that there's a reason to be optimistic. And I hope you guys are, too, about the future we have in our space program. Well, look, we're going to take our five-minute built-in hold, get everyone up to date on the latest news, weather, and sports. When we come back, we'll hear from Shuttle Launch Director Bob Seek, among others. Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk. That's right, you're listening to WMMB. Today's show brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, we spent the first half hour talking about the future of our space program, and if along the way any of those comments or thoughts inspire you to make some comments or thoughts, we sure love to hear from you. Give us a call, 321-768-1240. Star 1240 is the number for AT&T wireless customers here on Florida's Space Coast. If you're listening online or just would be more comfortable sending us an email, you're always welcome to send your email comments and questions to us. The address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, I'm pleased to have with us today on the phone Bob Seek, former launch director and an all-around good guy. We've got some interesting things to talk about. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Jim. Good to be here, as always.
Well, let's see what's on our mind today. Bob, you are calling today wearing the hat of the chairman of the selection committee for the Astronaut Hall of Fame, in the annual Astronaut Hall of Fame induction ceremony coming up here in May again. And this past week, the 2011 honorees were announced. And would you tell us about who they are? And let's talk about the process a little bit.
Well, okay. The honorees this year are of course, retired astronauts. One is Carol, and that's a guy, Bobko. He's affectionately known as Bo,
right,
by those in the astronaut corps and those that have been part of the space program. Bo is, well, I hesitate to call him older, because he's one of the astronauts that's been on part of the astronaut corps since the Apollo days,
right?
And and of course, to meet the criteria, he had to have been retired and out of the astronaut corps for a minimum of 5 years, and it had to be at least 17 years since his last mission, which was a shuttle flight. In his case, he flew three times, and his last shuttle flight was in the mid-80s. And a few words about Bo. In addition to being a three-time flyer and on the shuttle, and two of those missions, he was the commander. I would say he has the distinction, if that's such a thing, as being the only shuttle commander to blow out a tire on the landing, in this case at the Kennedy Space Center. And I think I'll have to check the records on this. I think he's the first astronaut to ever fly, and maybe even the only one, twice in the same calendar year.
That could be.
But Bo is a very affable, big. He's a huge guy. He, as you can tell by the name, he's Polish. His career prior to the astronaut corps was in the Air Force before he was picked to come on board in the 60s. So Bo is the we'll call him the first one, just by virtue of his last name, alphabetical. The next one is Susan Helms. Susan Helms is currently, and Bo, by the way, is retired and has been in a number of organizations and worked for other companies since his retirement some years ago. Susan Helms is still, although retired from the Astronaut Corps, is a major general in the Air Force with the Strategic Air Command. She flew 5 times, and those missions, she flew as a mission specialist or payload commander, I would say, amongst her notable background achievements was a stint, if you want to call it that, on the space station for over 160 days.
Well, and during a very early part, Expedition 2, I mean, she was still amongst the pathfinders.
See, that's right. The early flyers, and that was back in 2001.
Right.
Of course, Air Force, still active Air Force. She was range commander down here for a few years before she moved on, as is usually what happens with the rising stars, as it were, in the military, the Air Force, and subsequently became a general, and she's currently what is known as a 2-star. Now, what I remember her as the first time I met her, she was a member of the Max Q band and played the keyboard quite well, actually.
That's right.
But certainly both of them have distinguished careers, both before, during, and after their astronaut careers, and this year they made the top 2 in the selection process. They'll be inducted in the big event we have, the fundraiser for the Scholarship Foundation, in May. And I would imagine that since both of them have an Air Force background, that the other flyers that are part of the Astronaut Hall of Fame are going to get a lot of flack from the Air Force members, particularly the Navy flyers.
Yes, I'll bet you they will. Well, and Bob, you know, two people this year. Should we take anything, any meaning out of that? Normally, it's for the last several years anyway, it's been 3 or 4. A lot of times it's been 4.
Right. It's discretionary to the executive committee. Part of it is based on the number of votes that the people get and the gap between the those that receive votes. The process is to be eligible as a shuttle flyer, you have to have been retired from the Astronaut Corps for 5 years, and it has to have been 17 years, a minimum of 17 years since your last shuttle flight. And once you make that criteria, you go on the ballot along with 10 top vote getters from the previous year that did not get selected. Classically, our ballot includes anywhere between 20 and 30 candidates, and our criteria is we left it general on purpose. The top few vote getters, the most we've ever selected is 4, the least we've selected is 2. And again, that depends on how close the balloting was for those candidates that are that were eligible.
Well, and I know that being privileged and proud to be a part of the selection committee for these years, that I know the job's getting tougher every year. You look at the list, and there's so many good people on it, and people are being added and dropped for the list for various reasons, and it is getting to be more difficult to prioritize your rankings, if you will.
Well, it is, and the people eligible to vote are previously inducted astronauts, and that's supplemented with approximately 24 of those of us, either from industry or government service, or have in some affiliation with the space program, be it journalism, media, ex launch directors such right. as myself, ex-rocket scientists, and those that have had some connection with the human spaceflight program. And they're added to the number of astronauts eligible to vote. So the number of people eligible to vote, given the number of living astronauts that are still with us, is between 70 and 80. And this is similar to the way other Hall of Fames do their selection process, baseball Hall of Fame, football Hall of Fame, and that type of activity. We have a similar process, if that's the right word, for how we do the selection.
Well, Bob, I appreciate your updates. By the way, a little bird reminds me via email that Susan's getting her third star later this week, will become a lieutenant general.
Congratulations to her.
Becoming commander of the 14th Air Force.
Well, so. That's well deserved, and I'm sure that the selection committee for who gets promoted in generals will not be disappointed with their choice.
No.
As of course we're very happy to have her as part of our Hall of Fame process, and we look forward to having her and Bo and the previous inductees down here in May.
Sounds great. Bob, we'll talk to you again about other matters. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Good luck.
See you later, Bob. Okay. There goes former launch director Bob Seek with about 2 minutes left. Quickly, let's go to Bill in Melbourne, who has a question about space policy.
Right. Jim, if the Russians are going to have being controlling space, and the Chinese are becoming much more controlling or developing a brand new missile to kill our aircraft carriers, and it's been publicized, and high-tech, and we're sending all our technology over there, which they don't have to do a basic R&D because we give it to them. Our universities give it to them that the federal government supports, the major MIT and so on.
Right.
My question is this. If this heavy lift is so critical for so many primary economic and national security purposes, why are things being – and if there's such a huge investment in the Kennedy lift and the range and the natural attributes off the Atlantic here, why is this not made by our politicians like Nelson and others a national security issue where – the Manhattan Project, where the major
right.
universities and others are all brought into this with as an open architecture, like
right. Bill,
Microsoft.
Bill, it's a good question.
And required to.
Bill, it's a good question. I will address it when we come back from this break. National security, absolutely. Let's talk about it in just a moment. We're going to take this break. We'll be back with more with Space Talk. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to WMMB.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance,
go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Banky.
I thought we did this last week.
The
theme's so nice, we had to play it twice. I know why that happened, by the way. I've become smart enough to know why that happened. And we blame our number one manager who's mucking around with the computers again today. Is he trained? Is he certified? I mean, anyone can control out delete, but, you know, he can probably come in the studio and bang me on the head now. Well, let's wrap up this edition of Space Talk right here on WMMB. I'm Jim Banky. We're sponsored by Space Florida, as always. I also want to remind you today that Space Talk brought to you today by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, where among the out-of-this-world experiences available to you right now are daily showings of the big motion picture movie Tron Legacy. It can be seen in 3D at the IMAX theater there. And when you leave the theater, you can head in any direction you want because you can also strap yourselves into a shuttle launch experience, tour behind the scenes, or walk beneath the massive moon rocket. It all adds up to a day of fun and a lifetime of inspiration. Get all the details online at kennedyspacecenter.com. Well, before the break, we heard from Bill from Melbourne asking the question, basically, you know, what's the deal if this is so important, if our space program is so important, the launch infrastructure, the rockets, the heavy lift vehicles that we need, and it's so important to our national security, as so many people do say and claim and use in the rhetoric, then why isn't it a bigger deal? Why don't we have this all funded and taken care of, and why is we even discussing it as a debate, as a matter of which course to take? Well, that's an age-old question, because it's part of the debate and rhetoric that's been going on for years and years and years. Our exploration program not considered part of national security. Our technical prowess as a nation definitely part of national security. And one makes the argument, as I do, that if you're going to go explore other planets and take your people out there to do that, then you're going to have a technological base in your country that will allow you to compete with the other nations that are either threatening economically or militarily, as the case may be. And I have also contended from day one, and this is one of those out there space cadet things that people just sort of tune out when you make the argument, but it is ultimately about national security. It's more than just national security. It is human species security as to why we need a space program, because this planet is going to become toast. The sun is going to swallow it up. We are going to not have a planet in several hundred million years, and I know that's a long time. We're mostly worried about the football games this afternoon, let alone to be bothered with what's happening several hundred million years from now. But that is why we need a space program, is to survive as a species, and that is our very basic human security at issue. And the sooner we can figure out a way to get off this planet and onto somewhere else, the happier I will be. Well, let's talk about launches. It's time now for our Space Talk launch forecast, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, during this past week, the next launch from the Cape was moved. Shuttle Discovery officially now targeted for February 24th at, the launch time would be about 4:50 in the afternoon on the 24th. Should be a pretty launch if it gets off on time then. That has consequently moved Endeavour to its next launch, now targeted for April 19th at about 7:48 in the morning. And the last launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis is in limbo, continues to be in limbo. NASA's planning for it. I've heard NASA officials say they're gonna fly it. They're going to find the money to do it no matter what. And yet we've heard just this week as well that perhaps the money won't be there. So that still hangs out there in limbo, if you will. The delay of Discovery to the 24th, necessitated by the fact that additional repairs are being made on the external tank to reinforce some structural members, some aluminum structure that were found to have cracks and were suspect of having cracks. The aluminum used, and by the way, the question is always has been asked, why aren't all the tanks this way, and you know, why just this one? Well, there was a difference apparently in the source of aluminum used to make this particular structural element on the tank, and apparently was not as strong as the spec had detailed that it should be. So these repairs were made. At the same time as all this is going on, of course, we know this is 1 week ago what was happening in Tucson and how that affected the shuttle program this past week. NASA, at the request of Mark Kelly, who is the wife of Representative Gabrielle Giffords, who, of course, was shot in Tucson and is still critical and recovering. Basically, Mark took himself off the flight for now. And four-time shuttle astronaut Frederick Sturkow is going to fill in as commander for the Discovery mission, the very flight that is flying next. Mark Kelly is supposed to be the commander of. And so the bottom line on kind of all of that is that the crew is continuing to train for the mission with Sturkow as commander. Officially, according to Peggy Whitson, the chief astronaut in Houston, Mark Kelly is still the commander of the flight. But as we get closer, decisions will have to be made as to who is actually going to get to fly aboard Discovery as the commander. Basically, the astronaut office and all of us in the space community, you know, lining up right up behind Peggy Whitson and saying that that we're supporting Mark Kelly, that we're supporting his wife and the recovery effort, and we need to have them concentrate on family and on health first and worry about flying this mission later. Scott Kelly, of course, Mark's brother, remains on board the International Space Station and sent down his concerns, and they have a chance to talk to each other on the phone and by email. So that's there. Of course, no shuttle commander has ever been replaced this late anyway in a training flow. We've had astronauts be replaced before, even going all the way back to, you know, Apollo 13 and even Gemini crews, when we lost the Gemini 9 crew and the 9A crew had to fly in place. We've had astronauts be replaced for various reasons as well. So not completely unprecedented. That's why you have an astronaut office to fill in. So there you go. Also, by the way, this week, Thursday, from Vandenberg Air Force Base, a Delta IV launch, Delta IV Heavy, lifting off from California at 4:08 in the afternoon Eastern time. A lot of our friends and colleagues with the Air Force, with the United Launch Alliance, involved in that mission out on the West Coast. And we will keep our fingers crossed and our prayers for that safe and successful liftoff. That's a big rocket, and if anything happens out there, it would definitely affect us here. So let's see, what else? Next week, my guest is going to be author Marcia Freeman. She's the author of a book about German space pioneer Kraft Eric. And Kraft Eric, his book, incredible stuff. I'm reading through it now. And he had a lot of neat things to say about why we need to be in space. As we close out the show right now, just enough time to let my NFL fans know I'm taking Pittsburgh over Baltimore, Green Bay over Atlanta. Tomorrow it's New England over the Jets and the Bears over Seattle. Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida, and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. Up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show. I'm Jim Banky. We'll talk to you again real soon.